一个好的。Mrs. Daphne Brown, Reel 2.
Do I go on again?
Yes, about the V1s.
Yes. Yeah, people were terrified. People were far more terrified of the doodlebug than ever they were of the actual raids, simply because it was like sort of H.G. Wells' Things to Come. How could anything sort of possibly come over without a human being guiding it, you know? That was terrible. And then eventually I went I worked, I suppose I must have been with ENSA when I worked in Dover. And then, of course, they had, what did they call those? Not to, the
V2s.
The V2s, of course. And that was even more terrifying, because of course you got the warning, which was a strange warning. It was a warning. It was a different one to the ordinary raid. You know, which how did it go? But this was a different sound altogether, and so we knew that it was. What did you say?
V2.
Yes. V2. But thank goodness it didn't come anywhere near us when we were there, so we didn't experience that. But it was awful. You just sit there, and you're waiting, you see. You're waiting to be bombed. It was very, very eerie and frightening. And I always feel that one should, if there's going to be a war, you've got to be young, because somehow when you're young, you can accept these things very much more, because there are compensations going on. Either you're meeting new sort of boys over from Canada or from America, and there are flirtations going on and parties and in between everything, you know. So I think you've got to be young. So
I suppose there's a certain amount of excitement.
Oh, yes.
As you were saying. Yes.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Because I know that I was meeting masses of people that I would never... I mean, all these wonderful Oxford undergraduates that I would never have met, you know, if there hadn't have been a war. I would probably never have gone to Oxford Rep, you know, and all these foreigners coming over and then there were what race are they? Polish, were they? Perhaps they were Polish. They were rather sort of, yes, oversexed, the Poles were, I thought. But they sang beautifully, and you'd I suppose they'd been going out to have a drink at night or something like that. And they talk about the Welsh being able to sing so beautifully, and so they're wonderful choirs. But these were superior to the Welsh. These were just ordinary soldiers who were it was unbelievable. Their singing was unbelievable. I just used to rush to the window listen to them as they went down the street. That was that.
How about the Americans? Did they brighten things up?
I didn't. I only met... I had a very great friend who was Lulu Dukes. Well, she's still alive. And her mother was Madame Rombert. And I sort of grew up with Lou, really. And did I tell you that we had to sign a contract? We always had to say that we would do 6 weeks ENSA a year. And so Lou and I, at that time, it was about time that we did it. So we said that we would get together and we would go to this, wherever we were sent, of course. And we were taking the place of Anne Shelton, who was sick. And I remember going to one camp, and all the soldiers were sort of lined up, you see, and we walked through, just the two of us with our suitcases, and they they looked at each other and looked at us, and the word went round that we were replacing Anne Shelton, and they all walked off the camp. But then, of course, later on, they thought better of it, and they came back again. And I met... I only worked for the Americans once. I think it was in the West Country somewhere, and it was probably at this time with Lou. And, you see, I was shy. I was a shy girl, you know, whatever you say about me. I remember sitting with the colonel. I was always protected by colonels. And one of the GIs obviously came up, and I'd never seen the jitterbug before or something, you know, and wanted me to dance. Well, of course, I loved dancing, but I'd never be jitterbug. I was terrified. I didn't know how to cope with this dancing at all. So really, I didn't get to know any of the Americans. I was a Canadian girl. I became the mascot of the Canadian Black Watch when they were at Aldershot, and they were a lovely lot, really lovely lot. They were, yes.
You were their sort of pin-up girl,
weren't
you?
I was their pin-up girl. Yes, I was.
What did that mean? Did you sign photographs?
Yes. I mean, I used to get letters from various men, and they were saying, we've been to see the show at the so-and-so-and-so-and-so, and we think you're absolutely wonderful, and we've decided that you're going to be our pin-up. And we've got your photograph on the wall or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. You don't have to do any more any more than that. But it's rather nice, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it would be an honour, wouldn't it?
Yes.
To be adopted as a pin-up.
I think so. And I've got some, in my scrapbook, I've got some wonderful letters. I was looking at them the other day from various soldiers and saying how they loved it. You know, when I'd go back to their mess and I would sing to them and all the songs that they wanted to hear. And they were beautiful letters because they were... I mean, some of them would talk about their wives and say, I'm going to write to my wife tonight and tell her that, you know, I saw you and you sang this and that and the other and how much my wife would enjoy meeting you. And so... they were lovely letters. I was, you know, they weren't soppy and sentimental. They were very, very nice. There were some good things about the war, you know. There were some good people.
Yes, it would seem that your contribution was a bit more than entertaining, really. That you were, you know, allowing a relationship to sort of help them.
Yes,
a woman to talk to.
I think so. Yes, and I was always interested. I mean, I later became a welfare officer, a Red Cross welfare officer with the services. And so I think I had that in me anyway. I always remember a story of a man. How I met this man, I don't know, but he was rather a sort of man about town and made no advances to me or anything like that, which was very nice. I used to tell him how shy I was. I mean, I was very young at this time. And he said to me, Daphne, I'll give you a piece of advice. When you... all people want to talk. They always want to talk about themselves. So let them talk. You become a good listener. And then you'll be known to be a good listener. And eventually that'll give you confidence. And then eventually you'll be able to talk too. And that was very wise. Because I did become a good listener. And I suppose I still am, really. I love listening to other people. And I love other people's problems. And trying to help in that way. In any way I can, you know. So where are we? I've got here, during the Doodlebugs, this great friend, another great friend of mine, Angela Wyndham Lewis, who was Priestley's stepdaughter, and they lived in Albany in Piccadilly. and I was always there. She was at Oxford Rep with me, and I was always in and out of cupboards with J.B. Priestley when the doodlebugs were coming over. You know, it all seemed to me that I was there, and we were in and out of cupboards endlessly. And then I've come to VE Day, and this brings in Priestley. VE Day, Angela Wyndham Lewis, she was working at Oxford Rep, and I was in London in some sort of show, and we agreed to meet, and I went to meet her from the station. And so everybody was dancing in the streets and dancing round the lights and, you know, the things in the middle of the street. I can't get my words out. And everybody was joining up and having a wonderful time. And we picked up a Canadian. And so he was alone, and we were alone. And so we said, oh, well, come back to Albany with us, and we'll have a drink there, you see. Because it was getting on, because she'd been working at the theatre. So it was towards the end of the day. And so we went in, and we got the whiskey out, and we were having a whiskey, and none of us drank very much in those days. And all of a sudden, Mrs. Priestley comes barging in. This is VE Day. She comes barging in, and she says, and who is this stranger? So we said, well, we've just picked him up, you know, Canadian. He was in uniform, on the street, you know. How dare you? And are you drinking your father's whiskey? Well, don't. Get out. And she turned us out on VE Day, you see. So what did we do? Angela had a flat in London, but she'd let some Dutch people have her flat for the week or whatever it was. So we wandered around London, dancing around the lampposts all night long, you know, until dawn. Oh, dear, oh, dear. So that was that. That was the end of that. And now, of course, I come to... Yes, well, of course, now I'm at the end of the war, aren't I?
Yes.
And I go on to CSEU now, of course.
Yes. Before you go on to that, could I ask you a few more questions?
About the
war. Yes, because it would be interesting to ask what the situation was, bearing in mind the rationing, with costumes. You know, how did you manage for stage clothes? Were you given a special allowance?
Well, the stage clothes were provided, of course, weren't they, by the production team. So that wouldn't... you don't produce your stage costumes, of course, but you're talking about your private wear, are you?
Yes, I was wondering, with the stage clothes, whether because of the shortages, whether there was a dearth of them. Did they sort of really continue...
I tell you the only thing that I was aware of, and that was because when I played Principal Boy in Hamburg, stockings. There weren't stockings. So, of course, when the... Because I never had an American boyfriend, ever. But when the Americans came over, and the girls used to have American boyfriends, of course... they were always given stockings because people used to send them over from America, but I never had that. So do you know, I haven't even looked at photographs of myself in albums to notice what I would have been wearing in those days. Of course, there was rationing, and one had coupons. But I didn't think that I was deprived, not in that way. Maybe I was, but I wasn't aware of it.
And could you still get makeup? Was there plenty of stage makeup?
Stage makeup was fine. Yes, that was fine. I've never had any problem with stage makeup. In fact, I don't think there was any. No, because you see, I was a redhead. And, of course, with my blonde eyelashes and eyebrows, I would never go anywhere without makeup. I do now. But I never did in those days. I thought it was terrible. I wouldn't let anybody see me without makeup. So it must have been all right. I must have been able to get makeup, you see. So that was fine.
And I would be interested to know about the content of the shows. You know, bearing in mind it was wartime, did more sort of patriotism come in? Were there numbers and, make one aware of the war effort and patriotism, the Allies?
Yes, well, I'm just trying to think where the patriotism would have come in, but I'm just wondering whether they were on. Was that during the war? I was in a lot of very intimate reviews with Joyce Grenfell and Max Adrian, and that was full of up-to-date stuff and presumably patriotism. But what are the shows that I've talked about? I don't think any of it came into... I mean, Two Bouquets, no patriotism there. No Oxford Rep, no. The Review at the Grad, no. No, other than... No. I would say no. But whether... I suppose that would have been more with... what do you call it? I can't get my words out now. The type of theatre, the type of music hall, that's what I'm trying to say. I think probably music hall would have been full of patriotic songs and Vera Lynn, you see, and all that sort of thing, you see. She would have been going, wouldn't she, strong? So, but my type of theatre, which was... one rung up the ladder, if you like. No, I would say no, nothing to do with patriotism at all. No. I mean, even the Crazy Gang show at the Coliseum, nothing patriotic in it at all. No. No.
Well, were the audiences, though, very different? I do realise that you'd only just really started performing when the war started,
yes.
Hadn't you?
Yes.
So probably this was, you know...
this is what I grew up with, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
But, you know...
I do remember one show, but then I don't think that had anything to do with the war. I think this is possibly the Coliseum show. It was very hot. There must have been a heat wave on, and there were people sitting there in their braces, you see, in the front rows. And this rather queer, but very well-known dancer, I won't give his name, came on, and took one look at them sitting there, and he turned his back on them and did the whole routine with his back to the audience. He was so disgusted, you see. But whether that had anything to do with the war, or they wouldn't do it today, would they? So perhaps that was just it might have been a wartime thing.
Yes, did people dress up more for the theatre then? The fact that, you know, he objected
yes.
to braces?
Yes, they did. They did. It's only this modern day where people go around dressed any old how. They never did in my day. No. And the stalls, you know. Of course, that's not part of... what was the show? I was given a ticket, a first night ticket for... But I couldn't take it because I was working in London, for Oklahoma. So I gave it to my mother, who was, I told you, was a very, very shy woman. And so, of course, it was a beautiful seat right in the centre of the stalls. And, of course, she said she could hardly see the show because she was surrounded by furs. You know, everybody had great big furs on and diamonds. And, oh, yes, people dressed up in those days. Really did dress up.
It must have been rather splendid as you looked out.
Oh, splendid to look at.
Yes.
Marvellous, because all the sparkly stuff came at you, you know. Yes, it was good. People did dress up for the theatre. They did, and I think it's very sad that they don't do so today.
I suppose there would have been a lot of uniforms, would there, in the audience as well during the war.
That was good, wasn't it? Yes, that was good. Of course, I haven't got to Pacific 1860, have I? Because what would that have been? Oh, that was before. Yes, that was before I went to Germany. I was in the reopening of Drury Lane in the Noel Coward show, and I had a wonderful part. Oh, his music was just divine. I think that was the happiest time of my life, really. And it was the conductor was Mantovani. He used to call me the girl. We were warned about Mantovani. Noel Coward got us together because we were quite youngish sort of people, and he said, "I want to warn you about Mantovani. You know, he's a lovely man. He's a great friend of mine, but he's, you know, so be careful of him, you see." And he always used to call me the girl with the bedroom eyes. And that was lovely. It didn't go any further than that, you see. And I thought that was wonderful. But what a man to well, both of them, Coward and Mantovani, you know. What a team. Oh, they were wonderful. And Mary Martin, of course, played the lead. And I understudied Mary Martin as well. And that was... I was going to tell you a story, wasn't I? That was a wonderful... Oh, the first night... The first night was unbelievable because we had the king and queen and the two princesses, Winston Churchill and his wife and family, the Mountbattens, and just everybody was there, you know. And when at the end of a show, if there's royalty there, I don't know whether they still do it, but you turn to the royal box, you see, and sing God Save the King or Queen, whatever it is. And that night, to be able to sort of turn and see all that display of people in front of you at the end of the war, you know, it was that was wonderful. And he was a marvelous director, Coward.
Was he a kind man to work for?
He used to pick out one person in the show to give his, and then he would vent his wrath on them, and he would be vile to them. And my great friend who I lived with, he did that to her. And there was a tree standing on the stage, and she was sort of by the tree, and he just said, "Dear, just turn a bit over, will you? Go further over. I can see you." You know, he wanted her to hide behind the tree. But other than that, he was wonderful. He was very kind to me. He was lovely. I mean, I remember you could ask him to do anything. Mary Martin, because it was a period, you see, with the fans and all this sort of thing going on. And she was worried about something or other, and she said, would he show her how to do it? And he did. And she said, he's so superb that I can't do it as well as that. He does it far better than me. So he was everything. He was a wonderful performer, a wonderful director. You could go... I used to find... I worked for a man called Laurie Lister, and who was Max Adrian's boyfriend. And I never liked... The people liked Laurie, but I never did. And you'd go to him and ask him, and you'd be worried about something, and he would say... Oh, I trust you, dear. Go away and work it out for yourself. Well, you see, you want help from a director. And Coward certainly did give it to you. Wonderful.
What was the name of that show? Can you
Pacific 1860. Yes. Yes, it was... And the costumes in that. hundreds of pounds each and that sort of thing. But it, and I think that it was the finest music that he ever wrote. But you never hear it. Nobody ever plays it. And the only person who ever there's one man who sometimes says that this music was just superb. I can't remember. Morley, what's his name? Morley. No, he works.
The man who does the music programmes.
Yes.
On the Radio 3, he does them, doesn't he? For the shows, the very good shows. I think I know who you mean. Yes.
Christopher. Yeah, I forgot what. Yes.
What were you doing? You were studying Mary Martin.
Yes, but I had a wonderful part as well. You
did
know.
You? What were you doing?
I was one of the daughters. One of the daughters. I can show you a photograph in a moment of that.
Well, yes, I'd like to see that. Yes.
But I used to love costume. And I did a lot of costume. And I loved the fan and the flicking of the skirts and glorious. Lovely. So, where have we got then? Now we come, I suppose, to... We come to Hamburg, I suppose, now. We come to CSEU, and the fact that I went out... Is it all right? Can I still go on?
Yes, I think I'm going to stop this tape now.
Yes.
And this is the end of Reel 2 for Mrs. Daphne Brown.